Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation this morning. Today, in fact, is Sunday, March 30th. When did that happen? March 30th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, March 28th, are the following for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. That number is 22,296. That's 22296. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, 22,297. That's 22297. This morning, A Vision for You presents The Life I Never Knew How to Live. So our speaker this morning, Katie's going to elaborate a bit on the different types of inventory, including step 10 and the nightly review in step 11. She'll just touch on some different aspects of that. So looking forward to that. You know, when we arrive to these rooms, we learn of the hopeless nature of what we have been trying to solve through our own willpower. And it's interesting because despite how the disease of compulsive eating has robbed us of our dignity, it's destroyed everything worthwhile in life, this realization of our powerlessness, of the hopelessness of this condition is really hard to, you wouldn't think it is, but it is. And some of us, many of us, hold very tightly to this idea that we can solve this problem through our own volition, through our own intention, our own willpower. In fact, the AA 12 and 12 even acknowledges this on page 21 when it's speaking about step one. It says, "Who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that, fork in hand, glass in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive eating that only an act of providence can remove it from us." And then further on, it says, "We perceive that only through utter defeat, you know, complete deflation, are we able to take our first steps towards liberation and strength." So this is the point at which we're invited to lay hold of the OA principles with all the fervor with which the drowning sees life preservers. And when we did this, it's promised that we almost invariably got well. These first 100 almost invariably got well. The 12 steps really are a set of guiding principles, spiritual nature, that clearly outline a course of action. It's a practical program of spiritual action that will solve our problem. And I don't know about you, but for me, when we look at that problem more closely, we first see some things at a micro level, you know, a little bit closer. We see, in the doctor's opinion, the twofold nature of our disease. As you know, it's characterized by both an allergy of the body and an abnormal physical reaction. And then, secondarily, a twist of the mind. We often speak of this twist of the mind as the mental obsession. And then, as our lens widens out a bit, the big book establishes that at a macro level, you know, our problem as compulsive overeaters extends much deeper. We have a spiritual malady, they tell us. I mean, what the heck is that? Well, so many different ways to perceive it, but the spiritual malady is an inward condition, maybe a sickness of the soul, if you will, that manifests in a variety of ways, particularly as restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness. And the big book suggests that the root cause of this spiritual malady lies in selfishness and self-centeredness. So what is the remedy for this condition? Well, the big news is that if we're going to overcome this spiritual malady, we're going to have a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience. And that can be achieved through the 12-step program. We seek a relationship with power. I've heard it said, perhaps you have as well, steps 1, 2, and 3 get us right with God. Steps 4 through 7 get us right with ourselves. Steps 8 and 9 get us right with others. And then 10, 11, and 12 keep us right with God, with ourselves, and with others. And when we're brought into alignment with a power greater than human power, well, we can stay abstinent. We can help others achieve sobriety, which is a primary aim. And on page 64 in the chapter entitled How It Works, Bill paints a very concise picture for us about what we who have traveled this dubious path can anticipate in the way of restoration. He says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, well, then we straighten out mentally and physically. And in chapter 11, entitled by our namesake for this meeting, A Vision for You, they showcase the transformative potential of the recovery process. It says, you will escape disaster together. And I'm going to quote Katie here. You will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey, and then you'll know what it means to give yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And joining us this morning to share on various aspects of the inventory process is Katie G. Katie's a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts, and she is dedicated to our 12-step way of life, and she's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. So it's with great appreciation and gratitude that we welcome Katie G to the line this morning. Good morning, Katie.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for that lovely and powerful introduction. Good morning, everyone. My name is Katie G, and I am a recovered compulsive eater in Boston. My heart is racing, so I'm going to say a prayer. I am the place where God shines through. Him and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, he'll carry out his plans through me. Amen. Thanks for being there. Thanks for joining us this morning. So if I say anything helpful this morning, I just want to convey it's because of the grace of God. And I take this program really seriously because I'd be dead without it. And the title of my special edition is The Life I Never Knew How to Live. And I am going to talk about inventory because having a relationship with God and staying in that relationship with God means identifying for me what the voice of the disease is and the voice of God. I've heard it said God is the hero of my story, and that's true. And I want to say just as an aside, when I talk about inventory, I'm talking about doing inventory abstinently. I don't have experience doing inventory if I'm not entirely abstinent. So I'm not saying that can't happen, but for me, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence, and I can't identify the voice of the disease versus the voice of God when I'm in the food. So to qualify, I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for just under 20 years. I'm down 95 pounds from my top weight, up 17 pounds from my bottom weight. I came into the rooms 10 pounds heavier than I am right now, but the real story of my transformation is about putting down behaviors. Scale, abusing my Apple Watch, abusing diet soda, abusing gum, exercise bulimia, and using this program as a diet. These are things that have been super slippery for me in recovery, and I've dealt with this chronic lie that I've told myself since I was a little girl, that if I'm thin, I'm going to be okay. So as Larry mentioned, I do have a twofold illness. I have an allergy of the body, right? An abnormal reaction that when I put certain foods, ingredients, and for me, behaviors into my body, it sets up an uncontrollable craving for more. But the main problem of the disease is in my mind. I never fit in. Growing up, my first day of kindergarten, I've heard it said I could have used a stiff drink. It's true. The negative voice in my mind, I would never wish on my worst enemy. It tears me down. It's loud. It's angry. I have a disease that wants me dead and will settle for me eating. So the solution, I have a spiritual malady, right? Like, I think that if I can just shove everything in to me, then I'll be okay, right? And the only thing that can change me is God. So again, I want to say that a few things early on in my disease. I ate and I starved myself because of my negative thinking. Eating and starving myself was a step up from my thinking. I want to give an example of how it worked for me and how it can work for me today. So I have this fear, right, of not being good enough. When I'm lodged in that fear of not being good enough, everything that happens around me is evidence that I'm not good enough because I'm believing the lies of this fear. An AA hero of mine talks about a limo driving up to the sidewalk. You get in and he says, my name is Fear and I'm going to drive you around today. So inventory allows me to get out of the fear and ask myself, what would be different if I trusted and relied on God? What would my thinking be? If I'm not afraid of not being good enough, what would be happening in the world, right? Because there's like a major difference between what happens in my mind and reality. So I do the inventory, not because I want to take a close look at my navel, but because my job every day is fitting myself to be of maximum service to God and those around me. I can't hear the voice of God. I can't hear God's instructions if I'm caught in negative thinking, if I'm caught in fear. So why do inventory? Well, there's a promise. To me, it's a promise in the book that says I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. Of course, we all fall much below this standard many times, but we must try to repair the damage immediately lest we pay the penalty by a spree. So I literally can't wrap my head around sometimes that I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. Think about that. Like, regardless, no matter what, in all circumstances and at all times. But I have to tell you, it's true. So why do I do inventory? Again, not because I want a super smart intellectual evaluation of myself, but because if I don't do inventory, as it says, if I don't try and repair the damage immediately, I'm going to end up on a spree. So again, the main problem of my disease is in my mind. So I want to be clear. There are three kinds of inventories, okay, in the steps. We have a four-step inventory, which brings us 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That is an annual house cleaning. That's what the 12 and 12 refers to it as. I then have a spot check inventory, also called by the big book, a 10th step, and then I have a nightly review, which is called by the big book, the first part of step 11. So I have an annual house cleaning, a spot check inventory, and a nightly review. So I wanted to use this Sunday special edition to share how I use these inventories to stay recovered. So for me, and I know not all of you do this, not saying it's required, but I do an annual house cleaning because I find there are new layers of fear that I need to work on. So right now, one of the biggest issues I'm contending with is my body image, anorexia, bulimia, and this belief that I'm only going to be okay if I'm thin. Some things that over the years annual inventory have taught me is I went through an annual inventory one year and saw that I thought I was too stupid to do math or science. And because of that inventory, I was able to get an advanced degree in math and science. That required continued spot check inventories, but really an admission of complete powerlessness over this fear. Secondarily, it has taught me how to be in relationship with others. So I came into the rooms believing I was unlovable. When I started to get in relationship with others, I thought that I had to settle. I had to find somebody who maybe not living quite within my standards of conduct, but, you know, whatever, because I didn't want to be alone. And today, thanks be to God, somehow a day at a time, I'm married to a man who lives in accordance with the new way of life that I live. Finally, I had this belief that God didn't have a plan for me. I wasn't good enough. I'm never going to have babies. I'm not worthy of recovery. Lots of surrender, lots of inventory on God having a path for me. And I just want to say today is my daughter's 7th birthday. I didn't get these because of inventory, but by admitting I'm completely powerless and putting my issues through the steps, I was able to surrender and see and experience life. So that's my annual inventory. And as I said, just to be current, I'm going through an annual house cleaning on my body in a way, you know, over the last 5 years, I've used exercise, an Apple Watch, gum, diet soda, and food plans because I wanted and I believed that I would be okay if I was just thin. Thin is has become God for me, and slowly, a day at a time, God is giving me a lot of surrenders around my body. So moving on, that's my annual inventory. I want to talk about the daily spot check inventory. One of the things I love is it talks about my thought life will be placed in a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of wrong motives. And so I've heard my thoughts have life, right? And so when I'm doing my spot check inventory, what I'm recognizing is that the negative things I'm thinking, I've given life to. And the spot check inventory isn't easy. It keeps me on the firing line. I know that that's a misuse or a misquote, but when I am able to do spot check inventories, I'm able to stay on this firing line of where God wants me to be, and it's pretty intense. So why step 10? Because I'm going to die if I don't continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I need to continue the maintenance of my spiritual condition. It's not about my spiritual condition, but how I'm maintaining it. We're talking a lot about inventory right now, so I'm not going to bring you through each step, but maintenance refers to routine activities and or correction or preventative repair done to prevent damage and prolong my life expectancy. And that is so true for me. This step 10, the spot check inventory, prolongs my life expectancy. There are 5 steps of step 10. So I watch for selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fear. I ask God at once to remove it, discuss it with someone immediately, make amends quickly, throw myself harder into helping others. I like to fall short, or I do fall short in all of these steps, but I'm grateful that it's written down and I can go back at any time. So I do have a 10-step partner, and I have a few other fellows, my 10-step accountability people that I do inventory with. I'm not going to be dishonest and say I do it every day because there are days I don't. When I don't go in. I mean, I'm just not that good of a person. For me, I find that every day I'm in judgment. I may not be in resentment, in this like huge anger feeling, but every day I'm judging. And for me, a resentment is a judgment. That doesn't work for you, that's okay. But I do look at my thinking every day. And when I don't go in, what I find is it just becomes very isolating in my head and I have a harder time getting to God. What my step 10s have taught me is one of my favorite quote said, it was only by repeated humiliation that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing blow of our self-sufficiency that we begin to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. My humbling admission of powerlessness is the first step towards liberation from its paralyzing grip. And so, you know, I'm going to be candid and just say my spot check inventories offer me a lot of repeated humiliation and lead to humility. So just to be current about some recent spot checks, one of them that I've done, actually two of them that I've done in the last week, one of them was about my body image and hating myself Struggling with the fact that I'm getting older, not wanting to surrender my body, not wanting to accept that my body has changed. So I put my body right through the work. I'm resentful at my body, the cause, not doing what I wanted it to do, not staying in the shape I want it to stay in. And I knew that I knew I had to do inventory, and I was very scared about being this honest with someone else that, you know, as a recovered woman, that I still struggle. I want to be thin. I'm terrified about what you all think of me. I'm terrified, like, I'm going to the conference and I've already thought about what you all are going to think about my body, you know, and the truth is none of you are thinking about me right now, but that's where my mind goes. I have a fear of not being good enough, and I immediately make these leaps of logic that have no relevance to the present day. So I put myself, my body, through the resentment, and it was amazing. A very dear friend of mine allowed me to cry, because ever since I was a little girl, I believed that I would only be okay if I was thin. She helped me to isolate these voices in the disease that look down at my body and see my thighs and see fat and have extreme dysmorphia. And she was able to help me shift, right? Like make that shift. So I have this profound fear of being fat. Anything that happens to me is evidence that I'm going to be fat. But doing the work helped me isolate, okay, this is my negative thinking. What would God have me think? Like, I don't know about you guys, but this is the only body I'm going to have for the rest of my life. God's not given me a new body. I can get plastic surgery. I can use Botox. I can do all of those things. But my body is going to be my body the rest of my life. And I was able to understand that my work is to see the gifts of my body. And I know it sounds super Hallmarky, but here it is. Like, can I send love to the parts of my body that I hate? Right, and then throw myself harder into helping others. I cannot get rid of self without self. So I can't stay in this spot check inventory on my body forever. I got to start helping others. I got to see how God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? Once I have gotten through the negativity and started believing the truth that I'm God's girl and seeing myself as he sees me. Other surrenders, I really have sought validation of myself through recovery and exercise. I became a mom 7 years ago, thanks be to God. But I didn't want that role, which is shocking because I worked so hard on having babies. And what I found is that I had repeated step 10s on women in recovery who could sponsor more, who could do more step series, who could do more service. Because I was not willing to see the role that God gave me. And I'm talking snot-nosed, messy crying with my sponsor on these. And what I saw, the lies I was telling myself, was that if I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. The other step 10s I was doing is I was jealous of women who could exercise more than me. And again, I'm telling myself, you know, if I do more service, if I get more accolades, if I run a marathon, then I'll feel better about myself. But I had this really powerful shift when my sponsor at the time said to me, you know, Katie, anyone can do service in Overeaters Anonymous, but you're the one who's been chosen to be a wife to Evan, to be a mommy to those girls, you know, and, I often will say, like, my first memories are, you know, wanting to be somebody else, doing something else with some other people at some other time. I didn't want to accept the role that God had given me. And thanks be to God, after repeated inventories, I finally surrendered. I saw that God was calling me to be a wife, to be a mom, and what those roles meant. You know, sometimes it means that I don't get to be on Vision for You the way I want to be 7 days a week. I don't get to train on with two little kids. I just don't. And my, but thanks be to God, I see the role that God has given me and I get to do it today. And I don't always know what it is. Like, y'all know, I don't like to make the bed. I don't like to pick up the dog poop. I don't like to do laundry. I don't like to make dinner. Why are these things important? Because my job is to be a wife. That's one of the jobs that God has given me. And if I want to be a good wife and a good mom, I need to do those. I don't get to put other things ahead of the role that God has given me. Same with exercise. So there was a powerful shift for me in that. I also, because of step 10s, I've been able to see where I am wrong and promptly admit it. So a couple weeks ago, I was believing that I was not good enough. I was being taken advantage of. My husband was working from home. He wasn't on an earpiece. He was sitting there at his the dining room table. I could hear him throughout the house. And the resentment was just building inside of me, right? And so I justified walking up to him and making a snarky face. And I didn't just do it once. I did it three times. Afterwards, when he got us a call, I got to receive from him feedback about what it was like to be in relationship with me when I was in fear and self. And it wasn't pretty. He took the opportunity to tell me how disrespected I made him feel, that he was meeting with some top-level executives. He forgot what he was saying half the time. And again, this is a repeated humiliation. If you know me, you know I've done a lot of work on him sitting at the dining room table not having an earpiece. And the thing is, like, the truth is, I knew immediately that I was wrong, and I was able to listen and immediately amend my behavior. So one of the things I wanted to point out is when you continue to do the work, for me, I've become more sensitive to when I've done things wrong and how to rectify the situation. The other really important message for me in step 10 is that it is a spiritual axiom. When I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with me. If somebody hurts me and I am sore, I am in the wrong also. And then it says, but are there no exceptions to the rule? What about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats on us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For those of us in AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those that are qualified to handle it. And that is very true. For me recently, and this is an outside issue that I'm going to stay entirely neutral with, I, like the rest of the world, went through a political season. For me, the political season brought intense hurt, distrust, not nose messy crying, step 10s. I was hurt. I felt justified by my anger, but I couldn't keep it together. And every time, you know, and I would come up again. And so I found myself, I would drive past signs of an opposing party, and with my children in the car, I was rolling down the window and shouting at other people. The thing is, I'm not qualified to handle that kind of anger. My husband can yell at others. It's the dubious luxury of normal men. He can yell, but I cannot. That yelling turned into snot-nosed, messy crying, step 10s, and going to God and remembering God is my safety. God is my security. God is taking care of this world. The literature tells me I was not skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw, it was in my wrath, it was always justified. And that anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, could keep me in an emotional jag indefinitely. So I don't know if this has happened to you, but anger, you know, when I have not kept it in check, has led to a complete emotional hangover. And an emotional hangover, eating is going to be a step up. Why? Because I wake up in the morning. I can't think clearly. I can't, you know, I don't remember what I'm supposed to do. I'm not going to God. I'm not sponsoring. all of these things that are brought about when I'm emotionally hungover. So I really had to do a lot of work, and I've had to do a lot of work on anger. I'll tell you what, it has changed for me a lot in frequency, in duration, and in intensity. I remember 10 years ago when I was just getting to know my husband, I remember doing inventory with friends, sobbing because I was so angry about my husband's inability to communicate with me on my terms. And that's not an issue for me anymore. And it was very present. So what I want to say about thought check inventory is to continue. For me, continuing to do the work, what it does is it like lifts me up from my thinking and I get to start the day over again, right? So when I'm feeling agitated with my kids or like I said, my body, or I get bad news. Recently, I found out that I get to have a hip replacement, and that was not on my agenda. It was like, I am not a hip replacement kind of girl. That is not where I wanted to go. And I got this news, and it was the middle of my day, and my stomach fell out from myself. And so I did a spot check inventory. Why? Because when I'm in that kind of distress, God can't use me. I can't be helpful to my husband, to my kids. And again, I did a spot check inventory on the doctor, on my body. And today, you know, it's like, okay, God, this is what is in front of me. This is the reality. I don't like it. I don't like to be uncomfortable. I don't like to feel my feelings, but this is my reality, right? And God, okay, where would you have me go right now? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? It's not to be on the phone, screaming at doctors, screaming at physical therapists, trying to get my needs met. It's not being victimized. I like to tell myself I'm a victim of life all the time, and I'm not. Like, thanks be to God, I have this life. Unlike my mom, I have two working legs. She recently had a leg amputated. She didn't want to have that leg amputated. So the step 10 process gives me perspective. So I'm very, very grateful. Finally, the first part of step 11 is the nightly review. I do send my nightly review to a fellow. Step 11, as we've been talking about, consists of three parts, right? It's inventory, prayer, and meditation. My nightly review is not my spot check inventory. So my nightly review has the questions, where was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? To begin with, I can't use this as a checklist. I have heard a lot of nightly reviews, and I've heard a lot of people say, no, 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 no. And that's just not true for me. I take these questions really seriously. So under resentment, and I also, one of my sponsors taught me that the nightly review is a summary of my day. So the spot check inventory is the walking around step. In the moment, I'm disturbed. Okay, God, lift this disturbance, talk to someone immediately, make amends quickly, help others. So when I retire at night, which I've been told, retire literally means when I stop working. So for me, I don't wait until 10 o'clock to do this. I do this when I retire at night, which is usually about 7 o'clock when I'm not doing my job as I see it anymore. Usually 7 o'clock is when the kids are going to bed, and I take some time to look at these questions. So for me, where was I resentful? I often will do a summary of resentments that I have. The reason I do that is because what I find is that summarizing the day, I can see this bigger picture of where I've fallen short. Let me give you an example. So recently, I would say the last 3 months, I have been doing a lot of spot check inventory on my husband, our finances. Should I get a job? Do you want me to get a job? I'm not clear. What am I going to do for work? A lot of fears around this, but not a lot of reality. And so thank God I have a nightly review fellow, and I had been sending her a lot of nightly review on what are the expectations here and what am I doing, and I'm terrified and I've been out of work for 7 years and I have no experience. And I have been sending these to her for 3 months, and thanks be to God, she emailed me back and she said, why don't you talk to your husband? Now, clearly, that would be a really good step for someone to take before they start freaking out in resentment and fear. For me, with my alcoholic, it just hadn't occurred to me. I was like, let me figure this out first. I don't want to know. And she emailed me back to have a chat with my husband because of the repeated spot check inventories that I had been doing. I was able to clearly articulate to my husband, why are we talking about me getting a job? Is this about a bottom line? A 10-step partner said to me, you know, is your husband worried about your current bottom line, or is he worried about, you know, your bottom line for the next 10 years? And what kind of, are you going to make the decision about getting a job and what's best for your family? Or are you going to do it together? I was clear that I needed to talk to my husband about what are your expectations of me? And what's the bottom line? So out of nowhere, all of my fears fell from me because I had done these repeated tens. I knew what the voice of the disease was telling me. I knew what I needed to talk about. And I was able to have an honest conversation with my husband without my disease. And since that time, I'll say 3 months ago, I was stuck. Like there was an iceberg of fear on me. And I was paralyzed about the idea of getting a job, and I couldn't do anything about it. Like I was doing step 10s, it wouldn't move, it wouldn't budge. Well, because of my nightly review partner, I was able to have this chat with my husband, a clear chat about what his expectations are of me. And I have to tell you, over the last couple of weeks, I've been applying for jobs, and that has been amazing. So I really take this nightly review seriously. So that helps me, this is another question on the inventory, so that helps me look at not just my spot check inventories, but other dishonesties. For example, recently my husband had asked me to, a year ago, he asked me to stop allowing my father to pay for an appointment that my father said he wanted to. My husband said, don't do it. I shoved it under the rug. And that kept coming up on my nightly review until finally, like, eating was going to be a step up, right? These things, these dishonesties, they cut me off from God, and ultimately I'm going to use. So thank God, about a week ago, I swapped credit cards, and my dad and I are completely financially independent from one another. And, you know, I know that this stuff sounds really messy and gross, and it is. This is part of, for me, what it is to be a human being, how to get let God come in and to live in alliance with God. When I'm living in dishonesty, I can't have him in my life. The afraid portion of the nightly review, I add, you know, my fears. So back in my spot check inventory, I might say, okay, I was afraid of being fat, but I've also been afraid of, you know, other things. That question, was I kind and loving towards all? I don't know about you, but I don't have, this question is rarely answered yes. For me, kind and loving towards all literally means in thought, word, and deed. Like, I'm not that good of a person. I'm not kind and loving towards people all the time, not with my thinking. And so a lot of times I'll talk about where I fell short. I may not have had inventory associated with it, but I look at, were they yelling at the kids? This is a hard piece of recovery business for me that I am making a daily part of my inventory in terms of how I'm talking to my kids. And I use that in the question, kind and loving. What could I have done better? These are really important questions, you know, because I can look at, in that instance of my husband and the earpiece and the table, I could have left my husband alone. I could have stayed upstairs and practiced restraint of tongue, pen, and text. I could have called newcomers. And I don't know about you, but this is always on my list. I could have sought God more. That question, was I thinking of myself most of the time? I use this as an opportunity to talk about how I was helping others. So, for example, I sponsored. I went to meeting. I did outreach. Took the kids and husband and dog to school and work. Did 10-step work. Worked on my Vision for You talk. Took the kids to dance. Dinner and kids to bed. Time with husband and meeting for another fellowship. So I really like to make sure that I'm not thinking of myself most of the time. And then what I'm packing into the stream of life, what corrective measures should I take? Again, I could have moved my work location. I could have focused on praising the kids. I could have called more newcomers. So that, to me, is the nightly review. Some other things I just wanted to add with the last 11 minutes of my time is some things that have happened to me as a result of inventory. Not only have I, thanks be to God, stayed abstinent, and I'm able to look at deeper ways in which I have abused my body, and I just want to be so clear for anyone who's suffering in the rooms of OA, if you're suffering with exercise or chewing gum or using your Apple Watch, you know, contact me, because for me, these are ways that I have been cut off from God. With this inventory, sorry, I just had to do that little public service announcement. So with this inventory, I have found the step 5 promises to come true for me. In step 5, it says I can be alone in a perfect peace and ease. I can look the world in the eye. I can be comfortable in my own skin. You know, when I was snot-nosed, messy, crying with my dear fellow about my self-hatred and about what are other people going to say about my body and think about my body, I couldn't be alone in my own skin. And it was because of that negative thinking. But doing that work with her, oh, man, I just get chills now. It shifted my day. And that's why this work is so important, because it, like I said to my daughter the other night, she was having a wicked bad day, and I said, let's just start again. And that's what inventory does for me. It's like, let's just start again, Katie. Let's just move on. Inventory has shaped me as a parent, a wife, a fellow, to go back and say things like mommy was wrong, to get mad. And I've opened up a dialogue with my family. My daughter said to me the other day that I was a mean mommy. Instead of getting mad, I was able to give her a voice. Why was I a mean mommy? So my kids and my husband all feel really comfortable giving me feedback, and I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I'm pretty good at listening to it. And when I'm not good at listening to it, I do inventory. So I can also accept feedback. My mom recently is going through very serious medical conditions, and I put on my superhero cape and I didn't know it was on. And I was putting her needs in front of my family's. Well, my husband was able, and it's very difficult for my husband to talk to me about emotional things. He was able to tell me it was challenging for him and that he was very concerned that I was spending so much time on my mom and that it was taking away from my role as a wife and as a mom. And thanks be to God, like, my husband knows he can give me that feedback, because I can get high on anything. I was getting high on my prideful self. Like, I can handle this big shotism, which I can have all the time. So the best part about all this work is that I've ceased fighting anything or anyone. I'm not fighting the world. I'm not fighting my hip. I'm not fighting my body. I'm not fighting my husband. Also, it gives me proportion. So a former sponsor taught me this, and she's brilliant because she really helped me see that, okay, so lacking proportion. Whatever the precise definition of the world may be, we call this plan insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight become be called anything else? And, you know, my lack of proportion had me, I don't remember when it was, in 2020, I was prioritizing exercise to such a point that I didn't even know I had other jobs to do. I didn't know that my husband was working full time and doing the laundry and making dinner and taking care of the kids and taking, because I lack proportion. My husband was home from work last week, and I was just like, all right, you do your thing and then do my thing too. I just got really lazy. And Friday morning, God, like, I literally couldn't turn my back from this still small voice that was like, Katie, you don't get to go for a walk right now. You don't get to do anything but take care of the laundry, pick up the dog poop, make the bed. And these are not, the funny thing is, these are not things that normal people have to be reminded to do, nor do normal people get awards for doing these things. I often want awards for doing these things, but thank God, because of inventory, I can hear that still small voice directing me. Because of inventory, I've been able to find help in another 12-step program where I was really struggling in an area of my life, and I thought that I could use a way to fix it, and I couldn't. Because of inventory, as I've said a couple of times, it's leading me to just explore work outside of the home, but be really neutral about it and not just be curious. It's also helped me be just one among many. You know, the ego that tells me you're all thinking about my body at the Vision for You conference that hasn't even happened yet, and in fact is months and months away, you know, that's the disease that wants me back. That's the disease that wants me dead but will settle for me eating. That's the disease that starts to cut corners in my recovery, puts exercise first, puts the scale first, puts my food plan first. And all of these things have a place, but if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I'm going to go back. So I will also tell you one thing that's been super amazing is my inventory isn't focused on my mom anymore. She was the star for the past, I would say, 18 years of every single inventory I've ever done. Fears always went back to her, and they're not today, and that's a miracle. So other than that, I feel like every inventory, whether it be an annual house cleaning, a spot check inventory, or a nightly review, can be answered by St. Francis of Assisi. And what that 11-step prayer says is, God, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not seek so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that I receive. It is in pardoning that I am pardoned. And it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. So for me today, thanks be to God, I can stay entirely abstinent in the physical part of my program. But more importantly, I can be emotionally sober. And when I'm not, I have very clear-cut directions on how to get back in line with God. And most importantly, to help others. Because that's my primary purpose. It's to be with God and help all of you. Because my thinking is only going to think about me the rest of my life. And I don't want to be there today. I don't want to die today. And Larry, that's it. That's what I got. Larry?
Larry, press star one.
I can press star one. Thanks, Katie. So appreciative. I can't do a lot, but I can press star one. No, so informative and practical. What I really always hear from you is empathy, because you don't tell others what to do, but you speak of what you do to stay well. And I always am very appreciative of when a message is delivered that way. So thank you so much, Katie, for all that you do and for this moment. Okay, we're going to transition to Q&A. So start thinking about a question or questions you have for Katie. Just one question only per person, if you would. And before we do that, though, I want for you to have the share ID for the presentation this morning. I'll give it again at the end as well. But that share ID is 22,299. That's 22299. And we are going to transition to Q&A. Hang out for at the end of the recorded hour, because then we're going to ask Katie for her contact information if you can't ask a question or would prefer to just keep it offline directly to Katie. That's cool too. So let's move now to the Q&A. And with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your first name and last initial. So if you have a question for Katie, press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your first name and last initial.
Dana.
A-L.
Roz. Dana. Roz.
Shana.
I got Dana. Was it Jane?
Anne Marie L.
Yeah.
And that was Anne Marie, did I catch as well?
Yes, Anne Marie L.
Okay, I got Dana, Roz, Jane, Anne Marie.
Sandy K.
Kim M.
Sandy and Kim.
Pete
C. I'm sorry, who was that?
Jackie A.
Was it Pete? I got you, Jackie.
It was.
But I think that was... Oh, okay, thanks, Pete. I could. It's my age. Let's stop there. We'll stop after the last person. Give your name again, that person.
Liz M.
Liz. Okay, so we're going to stop definitely there for right now. And let me give you the list of the people I heard in this order. And if you could mute as I'm giving the list, please mute your line. I heard Dana, Roz, Jane, Anne Marie, Sandy, Kim, Pete, Jackie, and Liz. So let's start with that first go around here. We're going to start with Dana, followed by Roz. Good morning, Dana. Press star 1, Dana.
I'm here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Larry, and especially Katie. I really appreciate you and your sharing, your honesty and vulnerability. And my question is about, you mentioned that you have a 10th step fellow. You have a nightly review fellow. I'm imagining that you have an annual fellow that you do these inventories with. And is that the same? I'm new. I'm about to start to sponsor people for the first time. And is this somebody that has been consistent for you for years? Do you have different people that you work with? How do you, I guess, schedule, manage, find these people, and then, you know, ask if you can then be, will you be my 10th step fellow or my spot check fellow? How do you work that?
Thank you, Dina. I appreciate you. I appreciate your question and congratulations on sponsoring. I don't have a really good answer for you. So these people have fallen in my lap over the course of time. So I have a sponsor that I talk with 7 days a week. I know it's probably making some of your blood boil, but that's just true. I have a sponsor that I talk to 7 days a week. They are always the person that I give my annual inventory to. In terms of spot check inventory and my nightly review, both of those are women that have literally fallen into my life randomly. For me, it's always been super important to stay current with my nightly review and with my spot check. So I've always kind of looked for a God squad, some women that I can call and be accountable to. And it just so happens that over the last year, one of my friends and I were like, hey, let's try it. Let's see what happens. And it's just the grace of God that we find time. I don't know why, but we do. And then same with the woman I send my nightly review partner to. She's a spiritual mentor of mine. And I was like, hey, you still have what I want? Can you help me a little bit? And I guess what I want to say is I just really focus on pursuing, on doing the work, and then everything else has fallen into place. Yeah, especially with where you're at, get sponsoring. Just get sponsoring, do your inventory, and see what God wants for you.
Thanks for the question. I believe that was Dana. Next up, we have Roz G, followed by Jane. Good morning, Roz.
Okay, Larry, thank you for your service. Katie, thank you for this fabulous, wonderful special edition. Thank you. My question is, it's a comment and a question. I have a tendency to compare myself with, 20-year-old women's bodies, and then I beat myself up for not having that. What do you do anything like daily or regularly to show love and appreciation for your body?
Yeah, I probably should. I have to say I'm not a big fan of I don't know how to just focus on loving my body. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my trouble. So I really, for me, what I incorporate into my day every day is am I taking care of my body and in what ways? So I do in a sense, but I don't believe, and there's a really powerful talk by Melissa C about body image and whatnot. And I there's nothing wrong with it if you love, focusing on that. For me, I find, doing the work, taking care of myself, identifying that, but I'm not a big fan of self-care and self-focus and things like that. And I do find, Roz, in doing that, 10, a fellow challenged me and she said, why don't you send love to the places of your body that you don't like? So I'm working on it. So that's a totally confused answer, but I'm going to keep it at that.
Thanks so much for the great question, Roz. And thanks, Katie. Okay, next up with a question is Jane, followed by Anne Marie. Jane, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jane S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Still can't believe I'm hearing myself say that beautifully today. Thank you for everyone's service, Katie G. Oh, my gosh, I've been listening to you for years, and it just you hit home today. Thanks for clarifying those three inventories. And my question actually kind of plays off the last lady, so it might not be much different, but this is what struck me when you said, I'm learning to send love to the parts of my body that I do not love. That's one of my biggest obstacles or challenges. It has been. And I was just curious if you had a prayer. I was just curious if you did a prayer about that, because I struggle with that on a daily basis from the opposite end of your disease. Mine's the other way. But just curious if you had something you might share in prayer-wise. Thank you.
Not so much prayer, Jane, but I can tell you it's more like affirmations, looking at my body and saying, wow, I was a mom. I've had two babies. I've recovered from anorexia. I've recovered from bulimia. I used to be 228 pounds. I have legs. I have arms. They all move. The things that I've done, I have teeth. The things that I've done to my body are ravaging, and I shouldn't have any of my body parts or my teeth. So I think it's more like it's definitely prayer. So thanks for bringing that to my consciousness, and it's gratitude. It's like, wow, my body can do this today. Mm-hmm. And every moment is a thank you, God moment. That's what I've been taught, and so that's what I offer my body.
Thanks for the question, Jane. Okay, next up we have Anne Marie, followed by Sandy. Anne Marie, good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. I hope you can hear me. Thanks, Katie, and I think you're always so hard on yourself. My question would be, you talked about your family feels very comfortable letting you know how they feel, and you don't get defensive, and I still struggle with that as much as I work this program. So I'm just curious what you sort of do when you're in those moments and you're getting that criticism, where are you at?
Yeah, that's awesome. I've not always liked feedback. I really haven't. But that quote that I mentioned, it is only by repeated humiliation and the final crushing blow of our self-sufficiency do we begin to learn something about humility. And so for me, it's those repeated humiliations, the countless times over the last 10 years that my husband has given me feedback and I have fought, and then I've had to do a 10th step, right? So now, today, even if it's bringing up some feelings, I just breathe. So for me, God is in the present moment. So when I'm having some dysregulation inside of my body, I just need to breathe and God's right there. You know, sometimes it's like put my hand over my heart, the other over my belly, remind myself I'm safe, and to just literally sit there. I got a lot of practice with that in my Step 9 amends. I had a lot of people give me harsh feedback, and I learned that way. I've also just experienced people, I think because of my personality, I think people feel like they can say whatever they want to me whenever they want and not hurt my feelings. I've gotten the opportunity. Even worse comes from God. And also differentiating the truth from the false. Because just because somebody's criticizing me and laying their stuff at me, like I have a choice. Like it could be true. God help me see the truth. Or it may not be true. And God bless them. God heal me. So help me have, you know, clear thinking on what this feedback is. And a lot of that has to come after the fact. A lot of my work is just working on my breathing and listening. I hope that answers your question.
Thanks, Anne Marie. Next up is Sandy, followed by Kim. Good morning, Sandy.
Yes.
Good morning, and thank everyone for doing their wonderful service. This is Sandy Kay, recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. There are a lot of questions, but I only have one to ask today, and that is, how do you do your 10th step? I don't do it in a formal way. For me, it's when I have a feeling that doesn't seem right, I stop, usually. I stop and see what's going on in my body and then do a 10 step then. But is there a more formal way that you do it?
So there are a lot of different ways. Like I know one of our fellows has told me that the way I do my step 10 is too long, just because the way they do it is very differently. And that's okay. Like whatever's going to work is what I do. But I do stick to the instructions that I was taught out of Boston 20 years ago when I was learning how to do this. So that means, you know, I just follow the directions, continue to watch. I ask God at once to remove it, discuss it with someone immediately. So for me, that means I'm resentful at the cause. Where am I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and afraid? I make amends quickly and throw myself harder into helping others. So step 10 for me is 4 through 9 all the time. What that sounds like in specifics probably varies between people. But again, I think it's whatever gets you back to helping others and gets you back to God. And if somebody wants to hear more formally how I do this, please call me. I'm always happy to share more.
Thanks for the question, Sandy. Okay, we have Kim up next, followed by Pete. Kim, good morning.
Hi, this is Kim M. Thank you very much for your share, Katie. My struggles, and I don't know if you have any advice, is doing the step 10s. For example, I can't always recognize what I need to do a step 10 on. For example, yesterday, I just wanted to cry. I had no idea why. But then by evening, I wanted to binge, and I reached out to my sponsor and I reached out to my fellows. And then in my tears, I realized everything came forward as to what was bothering me. But this so often happens to me where I have no idea what I need, what's going on. Any advice, any wisdom, how to tap into what I need to do my step 10 on before it snowballs? Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kim. That's a great question. I mean, first of all, welcome to the human race and welcome to having an addict mind. There's plenty of times that that happens to me. So that's completely normal. I do have some more formal suggestions that I make to sponsees when I'm learning, when they're learning step 10. And a lot of people do this. So setting alarms and every hour on the hour saying, okay, what's going on for me? Where am I resentful, selfish, dishonest, and afraid? And trying to catch it so that it doesn't build up. Because in one of the examples I gave, what I said was that I was very entitled and I had this thinking growing inside of me. And I was very justified that my husband was making too much noise. And if I had stopped then, I probably could have saved both me and him from some pain, but I didn't. So I just want to encourage you to keep doing the work, not stop. And also like set timers on your phone. I know, and this isn't formal recovery, like 12-step OA endorsed, but there are people who do have, you know, spot check inventory partners and nightly review partners, and that kind of accountability can start helping you tap deeper. The other thing I just really want to encourage you is cultivate that relationship with God, right? Because God's going to help you. Like, I just know today for a lot of the time when I'm disturbed. I can feel it in my bones and my face and my whole being because I'm used to living more emotionally sober. So like I said, it doesn't happen all the time, but I'm more used to it now. So just continue to do the work and continue to show up. I mean, congratulations on being so honest with your sponsor and your fellows about what was going on, because to me that shows a lot of humility. You didn't have to be honest about it. At the end of the day. So, and that's why we have 11, right? That 11 nightly review catches us. So it's kind of perfect that way. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Okay, next up with a question is Pete, followed by Jackie. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking the meeting. Appreciate your service. Thanks, Katie, for your presentation. So the big book calls step 4 a moral inventory and step 10 a personal inventory. It sounds like you treat them both the same. Is that necessary?
I don't know. I missed that line in the book. So thanks for telling me.
Thanks for the question, Pete. Okay, Jackie, it's your turn, followed by Liz. Good morning, Jackie. Jackie, press star 1.
Good morning, Mr. Larry, and good morning, Katie T, and everybody on the line. Thank you so much. My name is Jackie A. I'm calling in from Connecticut, and I'm going to disclaimer, this is a petty question. This is a petty effing question. Katie, I have struggled this past week. I've been on an 11-step train. I have a 10-step partner. I adore everything about this. It saved my recovery, and I do try to do it yearly in a review. So I appreciate this. My question is, have you struggled with meeting times, agreeable meeting times, when it comes to a nightly review? So I'm on a train where you do a 10-step. If you're struggling with, like, you know, accountability with phone calls, everybody has different scheduling needs, different time zones, family obligations, outside meetings, you name it. Have you struggled to the point where, like, as far as doing a nightly review? Because to me, when I have to talk about something the next day, it feels like I'm drudging, like, literally it feels like I'm unflushing a toilet. Like, it doesn't feel good. It feels different from the catching up with a girlfriend or catching up with somebody. So I wanted to know if you've ever struggled with missing times or having to do your nightly review in the morning or an afternoon the next day, if it's ever bothered you, disturbed you, or how you would work that 10th step.
Jackie, I'm going to do my best to answer the question because I have a lot of stuff like floating in my head. So if I don't answer it the way you're asking, let me know. So first of all, I don't do trains for the exact reason that you're talking about. Just to be candid, I find it very difficult with my schedule being the way it is to work with a variety of different people. I just do. We're all very busy. We have very busy lives. I can take calls 5 a.m. to 3 p.m., but 3 p.m. is a hard stop for me unless, you know, something else is going on. But I can't deal with I can't afford frustration around when I'm meeting with somebody to do my inventory, and that's where God comes in. It's the same with phone calls. Like, if I'm playing phone tag with someone for a couple weeks and we're not getting each other, to me, that's God telling me, all right, you're done. Like stop trying to call that person. It's not going to work. In terms of, like, when I get the work done, I can tell you my spot check and then or my nightly review, I actually started during the day. Like, I'll start at noon, and I'll be like, because I do gratitudes on my nightly review, and I'll write gratitudes. Or the other thing I do is when I talk to the 10-step person, I'll take notes on what she says because it helps me so much to remember what she has said. At 4 o'clock when I'm sitting in my daughter's therapy office, I'll make some notes on what I did for the day. So I don't sit down to a blank sheet of paper every night. I work on it during the day, and that also helps me with step 10. But, you know, I think I try and be accommodating to other people's schedules, but it just can be really hard, and I try and surrender that because I have to remember my favorite prayer, which is that God is sending me who I need, what I need, when I need, for as long as I need it. Contact me offline if I've misunderstood you. Hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Jackie. Okay, after Liz, we'll see where we're at in terms of if you're thinking about a question for Katie. But next up now is Liz. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, everybody. This is Liz M. Katie, thank you very much for your authenticity and your inspiration. I really appreciate it. I have a question about sponsorship. Quick background, I've been in the program 40 years and I'm abstinent 10 years. So I understand how difficult this disease is and I'm very grateful. A person I sponsor doesn't like it when I ask her how she's doing with the food. Did tell me recently that she has gained back 8 pounds out of the 40 or 50 that she lost. I recommend, she did go through the steps. I consistently recommend steps 10 and 11, which she does not do. She does do a lot of step 12 work, and when she shares, she talks about like Eckhart Tolle and different philosophers and stuff, which, sorry to say, but it really annoys me because that's not this program. So my question is this. I've been very reluctant to, I guess, tell her honestly how I feel. I've been very reluctant because I don't want to push her away, and I know how difficult this is, but I'm frustrated, and so I just want your input on your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Sure, Liz. Thanks for the question. I mean, the first thing I would say to you is what I ask myself is, how's my inventory on that person, right? Because why am I disturbed, right? I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. So what's going on for me? I can also only sponsor the way that I'm sponsored. I don't have experience needing to check in with people on their food because I already have a daily process through which I'm aware of sponsees' foods, I'm aware of their alcoholic foods and their surrenders around that. So I don't, for me in my recovery, there's no separation of food and recovery. We talk about, you know, food is committed, it's written down, weighed and measured, all that. So I can't really say about that. I can only teach what I've been given. So a sponsee knows that if she's going to work with me from day one, she knows, number one, she's going to have to help somebody else when she's done. But number two, she has to do the work. Like, I don't know how to help someone who's not doing inventory. And not because I think they're a bad person, but because that that way hasn't worked for me. So I don't have the experience to say to her, hey, sponsee, what you're doing is really great and just continue to do it, or this is what I would suggest. Like, the only experience I have is if somebody's disturbed, how's your quiet time and how's your inventory? So it's almost like we're speaking different languages. So again, if somebody's not doing inventory, if they're not practicing abstinence, those are things that I don't have experience with working in the rooms of OA in my recovery. So if they want to work with me, that's great. They need to do what I do in order, not because I'm bossing them around, but because that's the only experience that I have of working. So please, again, and I work out of the book, right? And that's that. It tells me I have to continue. There's no way around that. So please feel free to call me and talk offline if that's helpful, or if it would be helpful.
Thanks, Liz. Okay, well, let me get out my abacus here. Figure out the management. Okay, we have time for a couple more questions, if there are questions. So let's try a couple more people if you have them. Who else has a question for Katie?
Toby W.
Toby?
Yeah, Toby.
And Pedro. How about we'll go with Toby and Pedro and see where we're at. All right, Toby, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Katie, for your wonderful talk. When you do your nightly inventory, as I do, when it comes to the question, are you, I forgot exactly how it's worded, but kind and lovable or kind to all, I cannot answer that yes, because I have a lot of anger in my heart after October 7th, and so how do you handle that question? Say a little bit more about it, if you would, please.
Oh, hey, Toby. I'm glad to hear your voice. Yeah, I think I had said this, and I apologize if I wasn't clear. I'm never kind and loving towards all, and but it's not so much for the reasons, like, it sounds like you're in pain, and I hear that, like, by saying you have a lot of anger in your heart, and I'm sorry about that, and I hope that God can bring you some freedom. For me, being like all means every single person I come into contact with, and I'm just not that good of a person. I can tell my spiritual fitness when I get on a meeting in the morning and just watch my thinking. I have a judgment-making machine, so a lot of times I'll use this as an opportunity to write out, like, I wasn't kind and loving when the girls, you know, whatever they did. I mean, they're 4 and 7, so whatever they did. And I'll use that as an opportunity to see maybe some more inventories needed. So I don't use it as an opportunity to beat myself up, but as an opportunity to see, okay, what corrective measures should be taken. So if I was working with you, I would say, Toby, what's with all the anger? Let's do some more resentment work and get you free. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Toby. Okay, with the final question, drum roll, Pedro.
Good morning, Pedro. Morning, Eric. You can hear me okay?
Yeah.
I thank you very much. Hey, thanks, Katie. It was really really beautiful thing. I'm so grateful. I feel so fortunate to be here listening to your story of recovery. My question is, I'm guessing that you work the program 7 days a week from your share, and that on an average, how much time do you dedicate to your recovery?
Thanks, Pedro. Thanks for that question. I don't know. I've been in the room for 20 years, so it wouldn't really be fair for me to answer that question because I don't have recovery time versus regular time. I will say that what's been helpful for me is to have boundaries. So I have a certain amount of sponsors. I have a certain amount of sponsees. I have limits and boundaries around when I take my calls because I have humans who need me. I have limits and boundaries. I had to step away from this meeting for a couple months because my mom was in an emergency situation with her medical care, and 7 a.m. was like the perfect time to talk to her and my brother and deal with the daily crises that we had. But I'll tell you, this program has given me a life. So I don't poo-poo it. I've heard it said that it's about a part-time job. I would say that for me. I talk to a sponsor and sponsees daily. I make a minimum of 3 outreach a day. I'm at most of Vision for You most days of the week. I have 2 other meetings I go to. Meetings. I do step work every day. I do step 10s. I do my nightly review. But it's all very integrated into who I am and what I be. I think for me, what's been more helpful is to consider, okay, what are my limits and boundaries, right? So that I'm not overdoing it, which is what I did for a long time. Like when the kids were born, like I thought it was a badge of pride to be like, oh, I have my newborn baby and here I am, you know, doing a lot of service. And that wasn't where God wanted me to be. It wasn't a bad thing, but God was trying to direct me elsewhere. So, but it is a vital, vital part of my daily life. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Pedro. So I'm gonna wrap it up here. So I'm going to give some information at the end here. But Katie, do you feel a sense of relief? I always feel a sense of relief when we get done. But I appreciate it. You did a wonderful job. And please hang out for the unrecorded portion here where we'll get Katie some information and I'll provide some further information for you. The share ID again for this morning's presentation is 22,299. That's 22299. I'm going to close with a reading from the big book on page 164 from our namesake chapter, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until